Okay, so I'd like to start off with the role of head of engineering. Can you provide your perception of the role of head of engineering, including its mission, its main challenges?
Yeah, I think head of engineering is a very unique role because it's more, you are taking care of a lot of leaders under you who are taking care of products. So I see this role is multifaceted. The first aspect is more about translating the vision and goal of the company and then taking it to the leaders and helping the products and the leaders aligned with the broader organizational goal and vision. The next aspect is people. Like as a leader, that's the most important thing, and investing and growing in leaders. As a senior leader, you are going to be focused more on growing leaders under you. So they could cascade the same values that you bring in, and they get in more diverse values. And the last one is how do you foster innovation? So everybody can work together and make things easier and fun. So I see as these three aspects as part of my role.
Okay, and what's the mission here? Product success in terms of tech? How would you define it?
For tech, I would say definitely it is making the product development seamless and achieving what you want to do for your customers with ease.
Okay. And what do you mean by ease? By
Ease
frequent,
by,
yeah?
yeah, by ease I mean delivering high value products to the customers with a keeping cost as a key factor and then keeping innovation on top of the mind. So how do you deliver value? Why would a customer choose your product versus something else? What is your product's USP? Those things are going to be amplified by the tech you use. So you have a edge in giving those to the customers.
Sure. And by ease, you mean riskless, effort, like effortless is a bad word here, but I like this Martin Fowler's explanation that he it's good to be at a state when you can deploy as frequently as possible and every dim or basically he defines it, I think you can deploy on every request of the business at very limited risk or cost. And or cost. I mean, I might have got it wrong, but basically that's the idea here. Is it something that resonates with ease in your definition of the mission?
Yeah, totally. I would say ability to go to the market sooner and ability to quickly adapt when you know something is not going in the way you want. So my ideal thing, what I tell the team is we should have our tech and technology in a place where I could deploy something on a Friday evening and go home without having to worry about what it will do to the product. So that is the level of ease you want to have.
You spoke about innovation, and I want to dig deeper a bit and ask what is innovative culture like according to your philosophy, and how does it contribute to the success? We touched on that, but I want to explore specifically the culture, engineering culture in the company.
Sure. To me, innovation, the first thing that comes to my mind when I think about innovation is being open when you do things. It could be doing something and redoing it, or how do you do something better? So, coming from an engineering background, I would say a huge factor in any company's success is how the company handles unknown. It could be at a high level or at the product level, right? How we come together to take on those unknowns. This is where innovation kicks in. Coming from an engineering background, the core principle is solving problems, right? Efficiently and effectively. And here we don't just apply that to how we do it in our product, right? It's also how we operate, whether it be brainstorming or how do you come up with a design or how do you do retrospectives when you launch something. Bringing those principles in collaboration and problem solving, those engineering principles, that has given the team an edge, an ability to do things quickly and innovatively. Like in engineering, we talk a lot about systems, but in real world, that practice is not really there. So thinking in systems is one philosophy I follow when it comes to running the teams. So which is Like instead of seeing things in isolation, you consider the relationship between different elements and how they interact to form a whole system. So that engineering principle, bringing this as a culture into your organization, has helped us a lot in success during tumultuous times. Like we all saw COVID and how we were able to innovate through that times using principles that we would in general use for any engineering solution.
You mentioned growing leaders that report to you. I imagine that mentoring is a big part of it. And hence my question, what do you think are the critical elements for effective mentoring from your experience?
Yeah, I would say start with having a very clear goal is going to be crucial. Like when you are entering a mentoring relationship, it is a relationship. So you need to have some clear goals on what are you trying to get out of it. That will help you focus and that will help you achieve things faster. And the next one is building the relationship with the mentor you're working with. It is not a like a I would say a Q&A session, right? You need to build a relationship. The mentor should better understand the mentee. So that is going to take some time. So building a relationship and having clear goals will help you go a long way in mentorship. And it's also a long journey. So being open about how you will not come out of every session with great answers is an important understanding to have. For effective understanding, good goals, and give time to build relationship, and then every session will incrementally add value and it will exponentially grow.
Okay, and how to build the goals? How to define the goals when working with a mentee?
I think it's mostly driven by the mentee. Like when you, let's say, within an organization, like you identify there are, as an individual, I need to amp up my skill in certain area, or I need to work on improving this skill of mine. So having a conversation with your manager about what those things are. And your manager is your first mentor, but they are not your only mentor. So identify what skill you want to go build and find a mentor who can provide that. And then come up with some goals which are, when I say like measurable, not when I say measurable, it's not necessarily by OKRs or anything, but you should be able to see progress in that. You should be able to see, let's say if I want to know how do I influence cross-functional stakeholders, that could be the skill you want to learn from your mentor. So understand how you are doing today, go through a discovery exercise, and then work with your mentor and see how it is progressing along the way and get feedback from your cross-functional stakeholders. So those kind of very tactical things will help you build your relationship. And the more as a mentor you know your mentee, the better inputs they can give. And it is a collaborative exercise. You are not going to come out with a magic ball answer. You are going to work with your mentor to find out.
Got it. By the way, what do you mean by cross-functional stakeholders?
If
Meaning, yeah.
what I mean by cross-functional is like coming from engineering, like if you are working with your product stakeholder or your customer care business manager or somebody, or your finance could be your cross-functional. Be function as engineering, product, finance, business, those are different
Okay.
functions.
All
Based
right.
on where
Okay.
you
Got it.
are, you could go to the other areas.
Okay. Got it. I know it was just an example, but like, sort of got me interested, and the definition of it. Now I'd like to get a little bit more insights from you regarding scaling the teams. You've scaled teams in the past, to scale them significantly. And my question here is, what are your key lessons learned here? And what was crucial to your success, retrospectively, on hindsight?
Yeah, definitely. I think when it comes to scaling teams, I would say it is like growing something, right? It could be like for parents, they know better, like growing a child. Like for someone who is, let's say, even like growing a plant, it's it is a team is a living organism. It changes and evolves. So if you want to scale your team, you want to maintain the core things that a team stands for, the values. And then as you scale your team, you need to make sure you are sustaining those values at the same time being open to add more values to it or change some values along the way when you learn. So when it comes to scaling teams, I would say the first one is commitment to investment in people, because end of the day, teams are people. So you need to invest in them as you grow. Like this means growing your leaders, growing your next set of potential leaders who could take on. So that is the first step when it comes to scaling teams. And then now you have the people, and make sure your goals are kind of, I would say, translatable to different areas as the team scales. So what was being done by one team will now be distributed between two teams. So how are you going to do the organizational structures, like how those org behaviors are going to be? So that's the second thing. And the most important thing in any large teams is communication. So when a team was a small, like 8 people, communication is much more easier. As you scale teams, you cannot expect the same communication across your organizations or across your teams. So build and spend time in having a great communication model. Like you should be open, understanding, seeing what's happening, showing what's happening in your team to others. So investing in people, investing in communication, and being open are going to be the key things when it comes to scaling team. To me, the biggest thing I would say de facto belief or default approach is every individual is capable of achieving great things. So the sooner you discover what drives them, it becomes easier. That comes in handy when you are scaling leaders, because every leader has an incentive or a motivation. So identifying that and having them do that part of your larger team would make you all function as one organism, regardless of the size of your teams.
I would add one asterisk to that. I think generally in great organizations, everybody has the potential. But I think in many, but it's also untrue in many organizations at the same time. It's a function of, I think, having that dependence that everybody has potential and can achieve anything is actually of the function of the recruitment, but also the feedback loop within an organization. There are organizations that fail because they have too many people that are just average. I
Totally.
think great organizations like probably your organization or the one that I work in or many other out there like SpaceX, for example, have enormous amount of A players or very talented people, but it's not always the case.
Oh, I totally agree. They have a study, I do not recollect exactly, where they picked 10 teams, like every team had an A player. And then they picked A players from all the 10 teams and formed another team. Then the team naturally aligned to have certain players who are not very, very successful. Individuals, when they come into a team, they become a different person. So definitely, like you mentioned, communication, feedback, and how do you establish the culture right from hiring is going to be a key when it comes to scaling team. Because sometimes scale happens quickly. Like you might inherit an organization which is completely new. You don't have the luxury of handpicking everybody. So now with the new team, how this world is going to change is something to be prepared for.
We touched the topic of scaling in terms of scale, in terms of quality, in terms of competencies as well. But with that out of the way, I'd like to talk about engaging teams, engineering teams, and work with the end user. How close do you believe engineering teams should be to the end user? And can you share some instances where customer feedback significantly influence technical decisions or product development, things of that sort? What's your first so firstly, what's your belief? And secondly, what's your experience in that field?
Definitely. I would say it is more than important ever to have the engineering team very, very close to the customer. Like empathy, building empathy is going to help you build great products. Like within my organization, we have various forums where an engineer could get the access to the customer's time. Like we don't believe in observing a customer from a glass door, letting them do something. Like you go and interact with them, see them. I strongly believe that every engineer has a product manager within, because today we are exposed to a lot of applications.
Nice.
Like you take your mobile phone, you have like probably 100 apps, and you use those apps and you have instant feedback on how you want the app to behave, how you don't want it to behave, what is annoying, what is not annoying. So similarly for your app, when it comes to building things, you need to go to the customer. For some apps, you are probably going to have the luxury of being the own customer. But for some, you may not be the customer. You might not even use the app. So regardless, going close to the customer is going to be key, because it will give you insights that a survey or a rating scale or anything else will not give you. Being in person, like hip to hip if possible, like is going to be a big differentiator. So that is one strong belief we have as a culture within our team. To get like during our onboarding, on day one onboarding, you go see the customers. What product you do, you go see the
Nice.
customers and see how the product is being used, or you use it if you are in that product area.
Can you share some example where engagement in the feedback loop by the engineering team changed how you change your beliefs about the product or user needs or influence the technical decisions of product development? Can you give us some meaty example from
Yeah.
that example? Or an
Let
example.
me got it. So, okay, I can think of one, which is one of our product offerings is where a customer is going to come in and pick a car for them to rent, right? So you have various offerings on your product listing page, and you as a customer would come in and explore what kind of car you want to rent, and then you would go rent. Right. So all of us, when we built it, we realized that the drop-off rate, like we call it the whole thing a funnel, like where you step one is you look at everything, and then you go to the next step where it is refined by certain criteria, and all the way you go check out. It's similar to any renting process. So when we built this solution, and it has been in the production for a while now, like for many years, and we noticed that many people who come in to the section, like the drop-off rates is supposed to be very high at the earlier stage, and it should be kind of going down in the end, because in the end you are more motivated, you're probably going to buy. But the high on the earlier stage, it should be high. We did not really have a clue. Like people who go into the page to understand, we thought there will be more drop-offs, but it was not happening. And it in turn was happening at the later stage, where you do not want drop-offs to be. It's okay to let a lot of people go up earlier versus letting them go in the end. So when we were looking at the page, we ran various user research, we asked people, it was really not working out. So we went to the field, see how people are getting exposed to our products. One thing being, I would say within the company, we all had a login for our application. So we go by default, we log in, we look at all the products and we know what to select and we keep going. But when customers come in, like, so the design was made in such a way that you have to log in to see what offering you have. Imagine going into Amazon where you are expected to sign in to see the product. So how many of you will browse? Like, that was the biggest learning, and we did not realize that, because as employees, we all had logins, and we by default go to the page where you have a login. When we go to the field, and even when we bring in users, right, to do the user research, we will create a login for them. Hey, here is your login. You're a test user. Go and do it and show us how you do. And then when we went to the field, we realized that people do not have logins, and that is a detrimental factor. So they don't even go to explore what it is. So they already, you are only filtering out people who are in a way motivated, but not going after the bigger crowd, which hasn't gotten a taste. So that was a feedback. We brought it back and we moved a few pages that are listing products within the sign-in flow, like we took out of the sign-in flow. So anybody can today go and see what offering is there without even having to log in. And that kind of reflected what we want, and it created a huge top of the funnel experience. And then we were able to
Nice.
convert it better. So like being in the chamber, even bringing customers inside did not give us this insight. Going out to the field really opened up.
It seems like one of those aha moments that maybe in hindsight seemed like kind of obvious, but they don't when looking at the data only instead of talking with the
Yes.
end users. Great example. I love it. I'd like to talk about your evolution as a leader. Can you share how your engineering leadership or leadership in general evolved over the years through different organizations and through different roles along the way?
Yeah, I think definitely it is a very, very, I would say, evolving role. Like pretty much every new challenge that you face, it'll evolve you into a better leader, hopefully. Early back in the days when I started as a leader, like probably almost a decade ago now, is I was so sold on the process. Like, oh, this is, we should have a process and this is how we are supposed to do things. And that is, the process is there for a reason, like investing a lot in process. Like, and then when I started managing multiple teams, I thought, okay, now we have a process, we need to kind of make sure the process is consistent and there is a parity and every team should follow the process. And when I changed teams, like organizations, I started realizing, and I started taking more teams, I realized that may not be the best way, mainly when it comes to teams that are diverse, when teams that are international, globally distributed. Then I realized that one process or process parity is probably going to hurt more than it will give you a benefit. So now my style is more into systems, like create systems and guardrails, like give people guidance and
Mechanisms.
goals, mechanisms, and how they can do. And the process could be tweaked. They will build a custom process for that. Give them goals and guardrails and tell them what you want to do and have a way to measure how they want to measure. That way it becomes a much more owned by them, like they own the process, so they can tweak it at any time. And you do not have to, I would say, one size fit all for everything. So every process is in a way today tailor-made. Like every team runs their sprint process very differently. Every team runs their retro very differently. Every team does their customer engagement very differently. So ability to create those kind of systems helped me evolve as a leader. And there's also a great thing to let the burden of having it and solving it by a central team or a central person versus give it to everybody to solve. Like decentralize the process.
Nice. Your approach to leadership evolve, and but I have a follow-up. What is your the biggest challenge these days in this fast-paced tech environment? What's the biggest challenge for you now these days?
Got it. I would say the fast-paced environment, it's very easy to get carried away with in terms of like technologies or what is out there and do I want to adapt that and stuff, right? Regardless of who you are working with, I think being one thing to not forget is being customer obsessed. Like that is going to be the key that is helping me. But what is the challenge in this fast-paced environment is definitely managing technical debt as you grow, because you keep building. Like customers are expecting updates every day. They want to see something new. They want to get excited every day with what you are offering. So you end up shipping a lot of features, and that in turn creates a lot of debt, like technical debt, things like a debt code, things that are not used, or features that you did not deprecate. And that ends up living in your code because going and doing that is not an exciting work. So if you take it to a team, that is going to be least attractive compared to shipping something to a customer that will help their lives or solve something for the product. So managing technical debt as you grow and scale in a very fast environment is the, I would say, the most challenging aspect. So keeping tabs on that and continually investing in eliminating the debt will not only help you move faster, but it will also make it more easier to do things instead of carrying around a legacy code or a legacy process or anything. So piling technical debt is what I would say as the most challenging thing in the fast-paced tech environment.
It's an arms race. And
yeah,
sure. Okay. I'd like to shift gears a bit and talk about your other roles, because you are a board member of DeFi Ventures. You're also a mentor at Grove Mentors. And I want to talk about these engagements. How rewarding are they, and what aspects of them do you find particularly fulfilling?
Yeah, the rewarding aspect is the huge driving factor, I would say, mainly because coming from a for-profit, public tech, fast-paced background, doing that for a while, and then the ability to take those learnings and going to a nonprofit world where resources are limited, the goals are really huge, and they really go and impact people's life. That is a rewarding aspect. So you take the learnings that you had in a company where you have process set, you have execution streamlined, fit and finished execution. Take those things to a nonprofit world where you may not have all those things and apply those learnings and make them better. So they can go faster, they can get innovative. So that is really rewarding, even the other way around. So working with a nonprofit, being on the board, you understand what is the value of resources. Like I have done one like few years ago, another nonprofit where that nonprofit did not have a whiteboard or sticky notes. It was so hard for them to communicate, collaborate in person. When you come to a real world, you see that as, like you take that as granted, like you don't have to think about it.
You live in a bubble. We live in a bubble,
yes,
right?
Yes, a very, very expensive bubble we live in. So, so taking those learnings where like from the tech world where you have resources and you know how to do things well to the nonprofit, and from the nonprofit, you know, how do you operate with limited resources? How do you embrace limitations and bringing it back to a tech world? That's a very rewarding experience. As a leader, you would know that your learnings are always transferable for you to be successful. You have to take learnings from one situation and apply it in another for you to be successful. So that is one area. It is rewarding because you achieve success. But the human aspect of it is you are helping people, like mentoring, working with people, seeing them grow into their full potential. That is the, I would say, the high reward stakes there. Like to see someone from point A to point B and how your role as a mentor or a board member has helped them shape, go there faster, is very, very fulfilling experience.
Nice. I think it's, for me, it's there are two ways, two different paths that are really worth exploring, actually are fascinating to me. One is establishing company and learning sort of, on your own mistakes. The other thing is actually like joining some top organizations out there, the ones that you went through and studied how things should be done. What's the, how should I lead? How should I manage? Okay, I've got a final question to you, which is with your extensive experience in engineering leadership, what do you believe are the key qualities of an effective engineering leader?
The key qualities for any leader, mainly engineering leader, is I would say the first one is, I'm going to borrow the line from Ted Lasso, maybe. It is be curious and not judgmental. Because any leadership, and mainly tech leadership, it's always evolving. The landscape is changing every day. And with the AI, it's only accelerating. So being curious about what's out there, and being curious about people, being curious about problem space, customers, is going to be very, very important and key. And not being judgmental, because we all come from different backgrounds. We have our learnings and we have our baggage. So using those to be judgmental is not going to be very helpful. So being curious and not judgmental is the first one. The second one I could think of is adaptability. Because things will change. You are curious, you are understanding. But if you don't change, it's not going to help. Be agile, like adapt quickly so you can be successful. The environment is changing. The world is changing. Like every year, we're getting exposed to new things thanks to digital technologies. We are getting exposed much faster than before. So ability to adapt, ability to have your teams adapt is going to be another key thing for us to be successful as individuals and as leaders in any space, specifically in engineering and tech space.
Great two lines. Thank you very much, Bala. It was very insightful. Thank you for the conversation. It was great to have you here.
Thank you. Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for having me. I really enjoyed it. It was a very a fruitful discussion for me. A lot of takeaway to look back and retrospect on.
Thank
Appreciate
you very
having.
much.
Thank you.
Better tech leadership powered by BrainHub. Follow Leszek on LinkedIn and subscribe to the Better Tech Leadership newsletter.